Welcome to Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. I'm Kate Burdett. Coming up, I'll speak with representatives from two local organizations that have teamed up to do some good in Columbus. And Jay Fox will talk to an expert about the impact E15 fuel is having on Central Ohio farmers. Plus, Doug Petcash of Face the State will have a look at state politics. First up on Columbus Perspective, Goodwill Columbus has launched a new loyalty rewards program, Do Good, incentivizing members who donate clothing and goods at any Goodwill Columbus location. Residents can do good on their mobile device and begin earning points for each donation they make. Points will be redeemable for various discounts, rewards, and community-based experiences. This initiative is made possible in part by SWACO, as Goodwill was recipient of the Community Waste Reduction Grant available for organizations implementing unique waste reduction initiatives. We're joined today by Simone Attles, the Director of Marketing and Communications for Goodwill Columbus, and Joe Lombardi, the Executive Director of SWACO. Welcome to both of you. Thanks for joining us on Columbus Perspective.
Thanks so much for having us, Kate.
Thanks for having us, Kate.
Let's get right to it. Simone, for those who don't know, tell us about what Goodwill Columbus does.
Absolutely. Most folks know us for our thrift operations. They've shopped at a Goodwill. They've donated to a Goodwill. But Goodwill Columbus has actually been serving the Central Ohio area for over 85 years. And we do that. This nonprofit does that in a few different ways. We provide jobs. We offer job training. Of course, we're supporting sustainability and the circular economy through those thrift operations and empowering communities. So, when folks think of thrift, we want you to think of some of the other things we're doing. The first really starts with employment opportunities. So 60% of Goodwill employees do have a diagnosed disability, often barriers to traditional employment. And we employ folks from our stores. We have a business services, custodial, and unarmed security business, as well as direct support professionals and career coaches. We also offer free job training to individuals through our several job training centers across Central Ohio, getting folks prepared for their first or next best job. And we also offer critical services to adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities. So providing round-the-clock care, providing day services, and some really, really cool, unique offerings like our art studio out in Whitehall, which provides those clients with an opportunity to express themselves through visual arts. So Goodwill Columbus does a lot. It's quite a mouthful. But we're definitely more than just the local thrift store. We're putting those goods and those donated goods to action through our mission.
It sounds like it. And this new program, Do Good, what is it and how does it work?
Absolutely. So Do Good's kind of been a project, a brainchild between a few of us to really engage folks in that greater storytelling, in that larger mission. So this is a program that's focused on donations. As we've mentioned, most folks know us through those donation doors, donating clothing, household goods, instruments, electronics, all the things that maybe are no longer of use to you, but we definitely want to keep out of the landfill. So as you're making those donations at our door, now you can log them on your mobile app, on your mobile phone, I should say, through this program, Do Good, which is free to download, free to use, and you'll actually earn points with every donation you make. So we're kind of gamifying and making a fun way to encourage folks to make those donations, which again, fuel our mission, but even more largely help keep things out of the waste stream, keep things out of the landfill, we know for our buddies at SWACO.
Well, it sounds like a win-win already, but it gets even better for those who are donating those things that they no longer need in their home, but they're keeping out of the landfill. Tell me about the different rewards and experiences that a Do Good member could receive.
Absolutely. So we want to celebrate folks, right? We know we've had folks who are consistent and often donors to Goodwill, but we've just never had a great way to do that without handing you a tax receipt and saying thank you. So that's really the root of this program is how do we give back to the folks who help fuel our mission? So as you collect those points, as you make those donations and earn those points, you can redeem those for fun and easy things like reusable tote bags and kind of fun swag item things. But also, we've got some really cool, what I'm most excited for is this spring we'll be launching some of these experiences. And those experiences are also rooted in circularity. They're rooted in reuse. So we've got, we've all done a paint and sip class or maybe gone to a succulent planting, a workshop. We're going to bring some of those experiences right into Goodwill and offer those to Do Good members. So you can redeem points, yes, for things, but more excitingly, you can redeem them for these really cool experiences with other community members, with other active donors. And that's what we're, again, most excited for, to kind of get our hands dirty, get people in Goodwills, and it's learning all the things you can do in terms of reuse with some of the items you might find in your local Goodwill.
Simone Attles is the Director of Marketing and Communications for Goodwill Columbus, and we're talking today about the new Do Good program that partners Goodwill with Sweco to reduce landfill waste by accepting those donations at Goodwill centers and then turning that into points on a mobile app that you, as the person donating those items, can use for rewards and experiences and things. Where can we find out more about the Do Good program and Goodwill Columbus, Simone?
Absolutely. You'll visit us on our website, www.goodwillcolumbusoneword.org. And when you add /do good, you'll learn more about our Do Good program. So goodwillcolumbus.org to learn more about Goodwill and our mission and some of the jobs and services that we provide to the Central Ohio community, and goodwillcolumbus.org/do good to learn more about this new loyalty program.
Fantastic. We're also joined today by Joe Lombardi. He's the executive director of Sweco. And for those of us who aren't familiar, Joe, what is Sweco? What do those letters stand for?
So Sweco stands for the Solid Waste Authority of Central Ohio. We are one of 52 solid waste districts that were created by the state of Ohio in the late 1980s with the purpose of reducing waste in our landfills and offering recycling and educational programs so that we are not relying on the landfill. So we serve all of Franklin County, that's 41 communities, including the city of Columbus. And we own and operate the landfill and two transfer stations, but we also provide a lot of programs, a lot of education and outreach programs to our communities to help them with their programs. Whether it's recycling or a reduction in their waste for their community as well.
And it seems like a no-brainer, reducing waste in landfills. It seems like every day we hear new statistics, new data that indicates that we really need to treat our earth better. But in your words, Joe, and from your perspective, why is it so important to have community partners like Goodwill that are willing to help with waste reduction efforts, and how does this really impact your mission?
Well, thanks, Kate, for that question. Really, you said it best at the very beginning of that question, is 76% that comes into our landfill, 76% of that material can be reused, repurposed, or recycled. And what we're trying to do is get those materials out of the landfill so that we could repurpose them or recycle them. Textiles is a big problem, along with furniture. And to have partners like Goodwill Columbus with this Do Good program is certainly helping us increase our sustainability efforts and also helping us with the reduction, reducing the waste that comes into our landfill. And we really appreciate what they're doing for our community. The Do Good is also great because it will create jobs and additional services for Goodwill. And one of our core values is collaborating with public-private partners to improve the shared quality of life here in Columbus region. So it's important to have partners like Goodwill Columbus that are helping us reduce waste, because we just can't do it alone. It takes all of us, all 41 communities working together to help us reduce that waste here in Central Ohio.
When I first introduced both of you, I mentioned that Goodwill was a recipient of the Community Waste Reduction Grant. Joe, I wonder if you can tell us a little bit more about that grant, and is it available for other organizations in the community to potentially utilize for these efforts?
Yes, the Community Waste Reduction Grant provides funding for programs at local government, schools, nonprofits, and other organizations that want to significantly reduce waste and increase diversion. We have 12 recipients this year, and about $256,000 was granted to them, including the $35,000 for Goodwill Columbus Do Good program. And that is the maximum amount that you can receive. It's $35,000. If you simply go to our website at www.sweco.org, look under our resources and tab, and there is a tab there for our grant programs. And we have several of them, but the Community Waste Reduction Grant Program is really, really important to us because it does help other communities and organizations reduce waste that's coming into our landfill every day.
Joe Lombardi is the executive director of the Solid Waste Authority of Central Ohio, also known as SWACO, easier to say. And I was about to ask you this question, but you already answered it, Joe. Where we can go to learn more about SWACO, that was, again, the website?
Is www.swaco, SWACO.org.
Excellent. And we heard earlier from Simone, goodwillcolumbus.org, and that's Goodwill Columbus, all one word, is the place to go for information about Goodwill Columbus and the new Do Good program. Again, like I said, it's a win-win for Goodwill, SWACO, and the community. A win-win-win, I guess. And what a great program to be talking about today. I encourage everyone to get that app on their phone and to, we're going to start spring cleaning soon. Spring is coming, I promise. We're going to start that cleaning, and there's going to be a lot of things you don't need in your home anymore. Why not earn some rewards for it while keeping additional waste out of our landfills? Simone Attles from Goodwill Columbus and Joe Lombardi from SWACO, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks so much, Kate.
And we appreciate you joining us here on Columbus Perspective.
The Fan.
You're listening to Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Here's Jay Fox.
E15 has been a top priority for the Ohio Corn and Wheat Growers Association for over a decade. Now they're calling on Ohio's representatives, senators, and state leaders to support the passage of a bill that would make E15 available year-round. Ohio is the seventh largest state in corn and ethanol production and home to seven ethanol plants that use 32% of the state's corn crop. These plants support over 19,700 jobs and 21,000 Ohio farms. The Valero Bloomington plant is just 40 miles southwest of Columbus. E15 is commonly sold in Ohio as unleaded 88. Proponents say E15 is an accessible option to alleviate financial strain for families across the nation while offering a reliable and established solution to the country's fuel supply. Luke Crumley is Ohio's Corn and Wheat's Director of Public Policy and joins us now on Columbus Perspective. Good morning.
Good morning. It's great to join you.
Thank you. Why hasn't E15 been available year-round before?
You know, this is one of those frustrating parts of the American political system. You know, common sense ideas still take a long time to develop. E15 as a fuel entered the market more than a decade ago. And since that time, we have been working to resolve a problem with the Clean Air Act so that the fuel could be sold year-round. When the Clean Air Act was revised in the mid-90s, 1994, I think, when it was revised, this fuel didn't exist. So the regulations, the law about this fuel type exist before it ever was created. And ever since the fuel came on the market, we've been working through the regulatory process and ultimately through the legislative process as well to amend that law so that consumers can have access to this fuel year round. That's really all that this bill that we're talking about so much lately does. At zero cost to the taxpayer, it creates a legislative fix for an outdated regulation that, if resolved, would allow fuel retailers here in Ohio to start offering this fuel year-round and introduce more competition into the marketplace so that a liquid-fueled option could save consumers money and reduce carbon emissions. That's a win-win.
Is there any reason for an oil company to oppose this move?
You know, this is the great story that we have out of Ohio. Over the course of the last couple of years, this has actually become an opportunity for us to work more closely with the petroleum industry. Here in Ohio, we have both Marathon and Cenovus as large oil producers, and we've actually been in a coalition effort with them to resolve this problem because their downstream customers, these retail facilities, need certainty in the regulatory system as well if they're going to make a business investment to offer this fuel. So this has been really the first time that I know of that the oil industry, the renewable fuel industry, corn growers have all been on the same page and saying in unison to our congressional delegation, hey, this is important. This is going to help two of Ohio's biggest industries, and you're going to help consumers save money. Again, that is unique. This is the first time that we've come together, and it's really special to see it happening because we're seeing, you know, this big coalition bringing real solutions to Ohio's consumers.
So we talked earlier about 21,000 Ohio farms being involved in the production of corn. What is the net benefit to Ohio farmers beyond the obvious?
You know, farmers are price takers. This is something that we talk about quite a bit. Farmers don't get to set the value of the corn or the soybeans or the wheat that they sell in the open marketplace. So the best way for us to generate a higher profit for those family farms, and again, these are family farms. The vast majority of Ohio farms are family farms. And the best way that we can generate additional value for them is to develop domestic markets that are closer to home so that we can reduce some of the costs of production, whether that's transporting the grain to a buyer who's closer. And that's really where these ethanol plants come in really strong for us. Those seven ethanol plants source corn from all around the Buckeye State, and that close, strong demand market generates higher value for that corn. So that's the immediate benefit. But in the long term, this growth in use, if we see an increase in the blend rate of ethanol in the American fuel supply, yes, we're going to make the fuel supply more resilient, but additionally, we're going to create some more stable markets for America's corn farmers. So it's not just, you know, an immediate profitability play here. This is looking into the future. If you want those farms to remain family-owned operations, we have to make sure that they're profitable. And that's been the big story of ethanol ever since the renewable fuel standard. It's created those market opportunities that have allowed the next generation to take over. And now it's time for us to plan for the next generation to come in, and profitability is the name of the game.
When consumers go to the gasoline pump, the last thing they want to see is a yellow bag over the pump saying there's no fuel. We had a rough summer with, in some cases, exceptional drought situations in counties all over Ohio. The question I have is, what happens if the corn crop is disrupted because of weather or other factors? Does that throw this into a tizzy?
That's not what we've seen. We got to remember that corn, it's big here in Ohio, but we're one of more than 20 states that have significant corn growth. We're only seventh in the nation for the size of our corn crop. We're also seventh in the nation for our production capability on ethanol, right? But when you think about how wide of a geographic area that the 90 million acres of land that are used to produce corn in America, that's a big production factor, number one. And every single year, you can look at the trend line, corn producers are becoming more efficient and able to grow more of a crop on the same amount of land without having to use additional inputs. So we're getting more efficient, and we have more than enough stock to meet the demand of E15. Last year, the carryover in corn was over 2 billion bushels, I believe, and we can verify that number for you. But what we're talking about here is if E15 would become eligible nationwide, it's not that there would be an overnight shift to this fuel. It's not a mandate, but there would be an opportunity for gradual increasing of corn grind and incorporating those ethanol blends at a higher level over time into the fuel system.
Makes sense. So when will you know whether this becomes reality?
You know, know, we have a couple of opportunities this year. Obviously, the nearest opportunity for us is a little thing called the continuing resolution. And back in December, this proposal was included in the original continuing resolution that was being negotiated in Congress. Unfortunately, it and many other issues was a casualty of the debates around the CR that evolved in December. We have another opportunity like that coming up in March, because that December funding bill expires on March 14th. So we're working with our congressional delegation, our champions around the country, to make sure that we have every opportunity to get this language included in the next continuing resolution, because this is a no-brainer. President Trump himself has called on biofuels to play a major role in the new American energy economy. So the administration gets it, congressional champions get it. We just got to get this thing across the finish line, and we think March might be our best first opportunity.
We want to thank Luke Crumley for being our guest, and for Columbus Perspective, I'm Jay Fox.
The Fan.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Now, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10 TV, here's Doug Petcash from the Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10 TV.
Ohio Governor Mike DeWine cannot run for re-election in 2026 because of term limits. Ohioans won't elect a new governor to replace him for nearly 2 years, but the race is getting off to an early start with the field of contenders growing. A well-known name is now expected to enter the fray. The Associated Press is reporting former presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy will kick off his bid for governor tomorrow evening with events in his hometown of Cincinnati and then here in central Ohio in New Albany. On February 14th, Ramaswamy's campaign filed what's called the Designation of Treasurer form with the Ohio Secretary of State's office. The form does not specifically say it's to run for governor, but it does allow the campaign to start receiving contributions and spending money.
The 39-year-old biotech entrepreneur and Ohio native made a national name for himself when he ran for president in 2024. Most recently, Ramaswamy served for a little while in President Trump's Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, before leaving that post last month. He joins Attorney General Dave Yost in the race for the Republican nomination. Yost was reelected in 2022 while receiving more votes than any other attorney general in Ohio's history. A political strategist tells me Yost has a lot of support among Republican primary voters and donors. Heather Hill is also in the Republican race. She served on the Morgan Local School Board and was appointed by Governor DeWine to serve on the Martin Luther King Jr. Holiday Commission in 2023. And a wild card could be new Lieutenant Governor and former Ohio State football coach Jim Tressel. When 10TV asked if he would run, he said he is focused on helping Governor DeWine in his final 2 years in office.
On the Democratic side, only one candidate has entered the race so far. That is Dr. Amy Acton, the former director of the Ohio Department of Health. She became well known for her role at the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic as she joined Governor DeWine for daily news conferences and updates. After her service in the DeWine administration, Acton returned to the Columbus Foundation. The general election may not be until November 26th, but the primary is 15 months away in May of 26. Joining me to talk about the latest developments in the Republican race is longtime political strategist and consultant Terry Casey. So, Terry, is this really an early start to the governor's race?
It is very, very early, because normally people for a 26 election wait till the municipal elections in November to announce. So this is very, very early. And the other complicating, or making it more interesting for reporters asking questions, is we're right now in the middle of the final 3 or 4 months of the state budget cycle for the next 2 years. So questions are going to come up, and we won't bore the audience getting into the school foundation formula.
Yeah.
And property tax reductions and inside millage and all that. But when you run for governor, it's a lot more about specifics and details. Whereas if you're running for Senate or Congress, it's easier to speak in generalities nationally.
Mm-hmm. Is that because Ohio has so many basically regions within itself?
Well, that's another complication. Ohio is not just Columbus, Ohio, and Central Ohio. It's a big, very diverse state. So that adds to the problems, because if you're going to run for governor, they expect the governor to make sure the roads are clear, the prisons are run correctly, the operations of state facilities, the money that goes out to 600 different local school districts, all those things raise questions in all parts of Ohio.
As I mentioned, we're expecting Ramaswamy to roll out his campaign tomorrow. What does he bring to the race?
Well, he's obviously got star power from national things, and that's really important in a primary, but you've got to balance out because you want to win the primary and you can appeal to the conservative base, but you've also got to not dig yourself in holes that creates problems in the general election in the fall. But again, governor is about specifics and details compared to some other offices where you can just speak to the base.
And, you know, Ramaswamy does have friends politically in the Republican Party across the country. He's gaining support from that, and he doesn't have to worry about funding.
Well, he can clearly write the check as he did in the presidential, and he can also attract money nationally because so many people know him from the presidential run and also the involvement in the initial Doge thing and being so close and supportive of Trump.
What does Attorney General Dave Yost bring to the table that makes him perhaps a formidable campaigner and candidate?
Well, he'll say that he's better in the details. In fact, he'll point out as an example, when he was state auditor, he recommended several $100 million in changes, savings, things that could be done. But again, when you're governor of Ohio, you've got to operate with a balanced budget, and people always want more, whether it's schools, universities, hospitals, local governments, everybody wants more money. But the state of Ohio doesn't have a printing press. It can't run up debts. You got to only spend what you have.
He's obviously based here in Central Ohio, in Columbus, with the state offices, but he has pretty good statewide name and face recognition, doesn't he?
Yes. Being state auditor and attorney general, being an attorney general gives you a lot of chance for TV time because people want to ask about consumer fraud and different lawsuits that he's doing, that kind of thing. So he's got a lot of visibility, but Ramaswamy, particularly in a primary, has a real close connection to Trump. And that's important. But again, you got to win the primary, but you don't want to create too many problems that blow up on you in a general election.
How important would a Trump endorsement be in this campaign? Or is it one of those wait and see things, you know, how his first year and a half in office goes?
Well, it obviously would be very, very important to look at the last two senators elected from Ohio. But we don't know how all the things are going to work out, including this past week that Trump wants to take over the post office. And you talk about issues that are tangled because there's fiscal problems in the post office, but how do you save that much money with that many employees? So the operating details get more challenging.
So, Terry, as I mentioned, a wild card could be new Lieutenant Governor Jim Tressel. Talk about somebody who is very well known as the former Ohio State National Championship winning football coach. But he just started in this race for Lieutenant Governor. I mean, not the race, but in his position as Lieutenant Governor. But people are already wondering if he's going to run. What do you think about that?
Well, I think if Ramaswamy and or Yost falter, he's definitely one of these break glass in emergency if you need to be. And in his announcement, he was very careful in saying he's focused on Lieutenant Governor. He kind of, as he did as football coach, he sometimes ducks the hard question, but that's actually smart in politics because sometimes you got to be savvy enough not to answer certain questions that are difficult or will get you in trouble.
Would he have the luxury of waiting? I mean, we are talking about how early this is all starting.
Well, because it is so early, until we get through the state's budget cycle around July 1st and we get into the end of summer, there's definitely time. And clearly, Tressel's the kind of person that can raise money quickly. And again, it's if.
Yeah.
But again, the good news for Republicans is they've got a lot of good options as candidates.
I was going to ask that about, you know, the strength of the candidate pool on the Republican side.
Right. And if you look at polling in terms of whether it's Yost, Ramaswamy, Tressel, they've all got some significant name ID. They've all got significant ability to raise money. Mm-hmm. The Democrats, obviously, as has been demonstrated in recent years, have not done that well statewide because their bench is so small or almost non-existent.
Only one on the Democratic side right now, Dr. Amy Acton. But do you expect more candidates to enter the race on the Republican side, considering the strength of the candidates that we're likely to be seeing after tomorrow?
I think it's pretty clear that the field is somewhat narrowed. Clearly, the main event right now is Yost versus Ramaswamy, no disrespect to the other lady, but those are the two main
Heather
ones.
Hill, yeah.
But the rest of the potential bench are lined up and moving, like the state auditor is going to be running for attorney general and the secretary.
Musical chairs.
yes. So I think, except for state treasurer, most of the other people are in place. Obviously, either candidate for governor, not now, but at some point before the early February filing deadline, it's got to have a lieutenant governor running mate.
And briefly, we just have a few seconds left, but we saw how much money was spent in the Senate race between Bernie Moreno and Sherrod Brown. What do you expect as far as funding and spending for this?
It'll be good for the TV stations in terms of ad sales, but the question is, I mean, Ramaswamy clearly, personally, in his national fundraising base, has a much better opportunity to outspend Yost, and maybe that makes a difference. Maybe it doesn't make a difference, because sometimes, if you remember President Jeb Bush, he had $130 million in 2016, but he didn't become president.
Yeah.
So money can be important, but message is also sometimes more important. And that's why if you want to run for governor, you got to have the specifics and the details down. People want to know.
Terry Casey, again, thank you for your insight on this.
Glad
I appreciate
to be here.
It.
Thank All right. you.
Columbus Perspective is a public affairs presentation of WBNS Radio. The opinions expressed on this program are those of its guests and do not necessarily reflect those of WBNS Radio, its staff, management, or sponsors.
The Fan.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Here's more from Face the State, courtesy of 10TV.
On Ohio Statehood Day on March 1st of 2022, Governor Mike DeWine announced the creation of the America 250 Ohio Commission. Joining me to talk about it all is America 250 Ohio Executive Director Todd Kleisman. Todd, thanks for being here today.
Great to be with you, Doug.
Guess it's never too early to start celebrating a big birthday, right?
That's right. And you did a great job pronouncing semi-quincentennial. That's quite a mouthful.
I practiced, I'll be honest. I was like, well, I never heard that word before until this segment.
Terrific.
So what is the goal of America 250 Ohio, and what's the focus?
Sure. You know, of course, there is a national effort. This is Ohio's participation in the nation's 250th anniversary in 2026. So we're not just waiting around for 2026 to happen. We are launching programs and doing a lot to try to get Ohioans prepared and take full advantage of this major milestone and really bring people together. We think that's going to be a super important part of this. So we're doing a lot of things to plan, programs, projects, initiatives, all 88 counties. So we're really excited.
I mentioned a little bit about the Creativity Trail, and we have some more video we can show of that. But it's like 100 and some destinations around the state. What are we talking about here? What's involved?
Right. It's amazing. We're going to be focusing on highlighting a lot of these places around the state. These are destinations that lend themselves to really Ohio strengths. What did Ohio bring to the national conversation, so to speak? And so air and space, you know, a lot of these places here, Ohioans will already know about the places like the Armstrong Air and Space Museum and the NASA Glenn facilities, you know, the Wright Brothers, all of those places. In creativity, you know, we have a lot of like art museums and, you know, places like you might not expect, like the Ohio State House, the Ohio History Center. There's, you know, the Thurber House here in Columbus. There's a lot of places here that lend themselves to the creative expression that Ohioans have really brought to the nation.
And it's looking at a lot of different forms of, you know, art and artwork as well, visual, music.
Right.
And pottery, glass, you mentioned that.
Right, yeah, there's a lot of different ways we're coming at this. We have six different categories, and I think a fun one that wouldn't be expected is carousel art.
Yeah.
So we have, I think, about 22 different places in Ohio that are on the Creativity Trail, where, you know, places like Mansfield, Sandusky, the list goes on. There's a lot there that you probably wouldn't expect. So we're coming at this in a way that I think will be fun as well as informative to Ohio. always.
So it is something that people can check out, but also maybe learn something, because you're kind of looking at the history also going back 250 years.
We sure are. Yeah, and Ohio has a number of touch points to the American Revolutionary War era. So we'll definitely lean into those places. You know, there are more than 7,000 Revolutionary War veterans that are buried in the state of Ohio. They wouldn't have started in Ohio, but they ended up here for various reasons. So we want to better help tell those stories. Of course, we have the Air and Space Trail and Creativity Trail. We're going to do a total of 6 different, what we call the trails and tales effort.
Are those the two main ones right now, the creativity?
Those are the two that have so far launched. We'll do a total of 6 of them. These are the important destinations that exist here in Ohio, and we'll package these together for tourism purposes.
We're looking at some of the Air and Space Trail video right now, and of course people know about the Wright brothers. They know about Neil Armstrong, but this also looks at some of maybe of the lesser known folks who've played an important role in flight and space.
That's right. Yeah. So we have a lot of places all around Ohio, every region of Ohio. And so we really want to spotlight those places as well. Big places, small places. And that's, I think, part of what we're trying to do in the big picture for America 250 is the places that you would expect to see and those touch points to the American Revolutionary War era, but also a lot of undertold stories, you know, some of the places that weren't necessarily in the highlight reels of history. So Ohio has a lot of them in abundance, and so part of what we're trying to do is shine a light on some of those places.
Will there be an actual, I mean, you know, obviously towns and cities around the state are going to have fireworks celebrations and everything. It is the 4th of July,
right,
after all. But is there going to be a big coordinated Ohio 250 celebration on the 4th of 2026?
Yeah, a lot of these things are already going to play themselves out locally. There will be those fireworks celebrations you talked about. I think all over the state of Ohio, there's going to be not just 2 or 3 big things, but lots, dozens, maybe thousands of things going on around the state. And so what we're going to try to do is help support those initiatives in ways that are creative and things that lean into this America 250 approach that we're coming at.
And we can also show the website for your organization. And, you know, is that the best way for people to get information, learn about the different initiatives, and find out maybe where locations are near them?
Yeah, right. The team has done a great job with our website. It is America250Ohio.org. And, yeah, we do try to put as much content on the website as we can. So that's where your viewers can learn more about the commission, about the different initiatives. We've got educational efforts underway. We also have a big undertaking. We call it Ohio Goes to the Movies. And, you know, Governor DeWine has been super supportive of that. That is an effort where we're going to showcase what Ohio has contributed to film over the years. So that's a really important. That's going to be one of the bigger undertakings that we do across Ohio. We're going to have all 88 counties participating. And so you can find out more at OhioGoesToTheMovies.org there.
And I believe Beverly D'Angelo, who's the famous actor who was in the Vacation movies with Chevy Chase, is also helping to promote that as well. And she's from Columbus.
Right. Yeah, she's in the trailer along with Governor DeWine, so you can find that online, but hopefully your viewers can also see that at the movie theaters.
Yes, all right. Todd Kleissmidt with the America 250 Ohio. Thank you so much for letting us know what's going on leading up to the big day in a year and a half.
My pleasure.
More than 5 decades ago, a student protest on the Ohio State University's campus forever shaped the higher education experience for Black students. As we celebrate Black History Month, 10TV's Kevin Landers takes us back to 1968 to show how a group called the OSU 34 made history.
The assassination of Martin Luther King in 1968 swept the nation into a frenzy of grief and anger.
And it was just heartbreaking. I didn't cry, but it was extremely deep and sad for me.
Lakeeta Henry was an OSU freshman. She remembers the hurt she felt about the tragedy while riding on a bus with friends.
There was a firm, righteous anger.
She says when the bus driver overheard them talking, he ordered them off the bus.
And we said, why do we have to get off the bus? And he said, because I don't want to hear that talk.
So they filed a report at the university police department. By then, word spread.
That little police station was packed. Most of the people were standing outside.
On April 26, 1968, a few days after that bus incident, OSU's Black Student Union had already planned on meeting with administrators to talk about inequalities on campus. Their demands included more Black professors, increased Black enrollment, and the establishment of an African-American studies program, to name a few. John Evans was the unofficial spokesperson of the Black Student Union.
We wanted fair housing, because, I mean, the housing at Ohio State was horrible.
About 40 to 50 students took over a room inside the administration building. It wasn't just Black students.
It was packed with primarily white students. We were probably the third university that in the country in terms of what ended up being a takeover.
Evan says at first administrators weren't interested in listening to students' demands.
Then they said, well, the meeting is adjourned. And I said that the meeting is not adjourned until we say it's adjourned. And then things got really, really heated.
White students locked the doors to Bricker Hall. The National Guard was put on alert.
We were upset because we were just being ignored.
The negotiations lasted 10 hours. What transpired led to wholesale changes at Ohio State from the top down, but it came with a price.
I was one of the 34 indicted.
We got charged with kidnapping, and then the misdemeanor was menacing threats.
Seven students were expelled.
We spent 14 months in court on that case, and we ended up pleading guilty to the menacing.
The 26th of April, 1968.
57 years later, Evans and Henry and the rest of the OSU 34 remain proud of their efforts to change the Black experience on the OSU campus. Never did they imagine a Black president would lead Ohio State when former President Michael Drake took the job in 2014 and later met with the group for their 50th anniversary of their protest. Today, their goal is for the university to honor them with a plaque or statue so other students will know the story of the OSU 34. The university says it's under consideration. Kevin Landers, 10TV News.
Thank you for joining me this week for Face the State. I'm Doug Petcash. I'll see you next Sunday at 11:30.
Again, that's Doug Petcash, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10TV. From the Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10TV. This has been Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. Heard each Sunday morning at 6 on WBNS FM 97.1 The Fan and on 1460 AM ESPN Columbus.